Lesson 6. Imagination. You can do it if you believe you can. Imagination is the workshop of the human mind wherein old ideas and established facts may be reassembled into new combinations and put to new uses. Webster's Third International Dictionary defines imagination as follows. 1. An act or process of forming a conscious idea or mental image of something never before wholly perceived in reality by the imaginer, as through a synthesis of remembered elements of previous sensory experiences or ideas. 2. Creative ability, resourcefulness. Imagination has been called the creative power of the soul, but this is somewhat abstract and goes more deeply into the meaning than is necessary from the viewpoint of a student of this course who wishes to use the course only as a means of attaining material or monetary advantages in life. Imagination can be developed. If you have mastered and thoroughly understood the preceding lessons of this course, you know that the materials out of which you built your definite chief aim were assembled and combined in your imagination. You also know that self-confidence and initiative and leadership must be created in your imagination before they can become a reality, for it is in the workshop of your imagination that you will put the principle of autosuggestion into operation in creating these necessary qualities. This lesson on imagination might be called the hub of this course because every lesson of the course leads to this lesson and makes use of the principle upon which it is based, just as all the telephone wires lead to the exchange office for their source of power. You will never have a definite purpose in life. You will never have self-confidence. You will never have initiative and leadership unless you first create these qualities in your imagination and see yourself in possession of them. Just as the oak tree develops from the germ that lies in the acorn, and the bird develops from the germ that lies asleep in the egg, so will your material achievements grow out of the organized plans that you create in your imagination. First comes the thought, then organization of that thought into ideas and plans, then transformation of those plans into reality. The beginning, as you will observe, is in your imagination. The imagination is both interpretive and creative in nature. It can examine facts, concepts, and ideas, and it can create new combinations and plans out of these. Editor's comment. Imagination is too often regarded as nothing more than fanciful dreams, but it is a tremendously practical, exciting tool. Forget the pejorative terms that you may have heard, such as having your head in the clouds or contemplating your navel. This lesson will help you regard your imagination as a useful, vigorous ally in your pursuit of success. If further proof were needed, consider that much of the vast Walt Disney Empire was born out of the fanciful thinking of a group that Walt dubbed his Imagineers, that the space program and many advances in medicine have been achieved by imagining what might be and then applying science and technology to making those pipe dreams real, and that even our military leaders openly drew upon Hollywood screenwriters to create imagined scenarios so that those in charge of the war on terrorism could prepare countermeasures to the kind of attacks that weren't covered in conventional military strategy. Napoleon Hill's text then continued, "Through its interpretive capacity, the imagination has one power not generally attributed to it, namely, the power to register vibrations and thought waves that are put into motion from outside sources, just as the radio receiving apparatus picks up the vibrations of sound. The principle through which this interpretive capacity of the imagination functions is called telepathy, the communication of thought from one mind to another at long or short distances without the aid of physical or mechanical appliances, in the manner explained in the introductory lesson in Volume 1 of The Law of Success." And further commentary. As was noted in Volume 1 of The Law of Success, at the time that Napoleon Hill was writing the original edition of this book, research was being conducted that strongly implied that telepathy would soon be a proven fact. However, by the beginning of the 21st century, the evidence in its favor is still largely anecdotal. It is the opinion of the editors of this updated edition that Napoleon Hill would not have been deterred by the lack of scientific evidence. Hill's interest in telepathy was purely practical, not in proving the existence of some parapsychic phenomenon. The editors advise the listener to suspend any skepticism you might have because the term telepathy has, in the intervening years, fallen out of favor. Instead, pay attention to the perfectly logical and practical application Hill had in mind when he used the term. Continuing with Napoleon Hill's original text. Telepathy can be an important factor to a student who is preparing to make effective use of imagination, for the reason that this telepathic capacity of the imagination is constantly picking up thought waves and vibrations of every description. So-called snap judgment and hunches, which prompt one to form an opinion or decide upon a course of action that is not in harmony with logic and reason, are usually the result of stray thought waves that are registered in the imagination. That you may understand how closely interwoven are the 17 factors upon which this course is based, consider, for example, what happens when a salesman who lacks confidence in himself and in his goods walks in to see a prospective buyer. Whether the prospective buyer is conscious of it or not, his imagination immediately senses that lack of confidence in the salesman's mind. The salesman's own thoughts are actually undermining his efforts. This will explain, from another angle, why self-confidence is one of the most important factors entering into the great struggle for success. The principle of telepathy and the law of attraction, through which like attracts like, explain many a failure. If the mind has a tendency to attract those thought vibrations which harmonize with the dominating thoughts of a given mind, you can easily understand why a negative mind that dwells upon failure and lacks self-confidence would not attract a positive mind that is dominated by thoughts of success. Perhaps these explanations are somewhat abstract, but it seems necessary to inject them into this lesson as a means of enabling the student to understand and make practical use of the subject of this lesson. The imagination is too often regarded merely as an indefinite, untraceable, indescribable something that does nothing but create fiction. It is this popular disregard of the powers of the imagination that has made necessary these more or less abstract references to one of the most important subjects of this course. Not only is the subject of imagination an important factor in this course, but it is one of the most interesting subjects, as you will observe when you begin to see how it affects all that you do toward the achievement of your definite chief aim. You will see how important is the subject of imagination when you stop to realize that it is the only thing in the world over which you have absolute control. Others may deprive you of your material wealth and cheat you in a thousand ways, but no one can deprive you of the control and use of your imagination. Others may deal with you unfairly, as they often do. They may deprive you of your liberty, but they cannot take from you the privilege of using your imagination as... The most inspiring poem in all literature was written by Leigh Hunt, while he was a poverty-stricken prisoner in an English prison, where he had been unjustly confined because of his advanced views on politics. This poem is entitled Abu Ben Adam, and it is here reprinted as a reminder that one of the great things each of us may do in our own imaginations is to forgive those who have dealt unjustly with us. Abu Ben Adam, may his tribe increase, awoke one night from a deep dream of peace, and saw within the moonlight of his room, making it rich and like a lily in bloom. An angel writing in a book of gold, exceeding peace, had made Ben Adam bold. And to the presence in the room he said, "What writest thou?" The vision raised its head, and, with a look made of all sweet accord, answered, "The names of those who love the Lord." "And is mine one?" said Abu. "Nay, not so," replied the angel. Abu spoke more low, but cheerily still, and said, "I pray thee, then, write me as one that loves his fellow men." The angel wrote and vanished. The next night it came again with a great wakening light, and showed the names whom love of God had blessed. And lo, Ben Adam's name led all the rest. Civilization itself owes its existence to such poets as Leigh Hunt, in whose fertile imaginations have been pictured the higher and nobler standards of human relationship. Abu Ben Adam is a poem that will never die, thanks to this poet who pictured in his imagination the hope of an ideal that is constructive. The Power of Imagination. The major trouble with this world today lies in our lack of understanding of the power of imagination, for if we understood this great power, we could use it as a weapon with which to wipe out poverty and misery and injustice and persecution. And this could be done in a single generation. This is a rather broad statement, and no one understands better than I how useless such a statement would be if the principle upon which it was founded were not explained in terms of the most practical, workaday nature. Therefore, let us proceed to describe what is meant. I will devote no time to proving that telepathy is a reality. To make this description understandable, We must simply accept the principle of telepathy, in the sense that every thought we release is registering itself in the minds of other people. You have often heard of mob psychology, which is nothing more nor less than some strong, dominating idea that has been created in the mind of one or more persons and registers itself in the minds of other persons through the principle of telepathy. So strong is the power of mob psychology that two men fighting in the street will often start a free-for-all fight in which bystanders will engage each other in battle without even knowing what they're fighting about or with whom they are fighting. On Armistice Day, 1918, we had extraordinary anecdotal evidence of the principle of telepathy on a scale such as the world had never before witnessed. I remember distinctly the impression made on my mind on that eventful day. So strong was this impression that it awakened me at about 3 o'clock in the morning, just as effectively as if someone had aroused me by physical force. As I sat up in bed, I knew that something out of the ordinary had happened, and so strange and impelling was the effect of this experience that I got up, dressed myself, and went out into the streets of Chicago, where I was met by thousands of others who had felt the touch of the same influence. Everyone was asking, "What has happened?" What had happened was this. Millions of men had received instructions to cease fighting, and their combined joy set into motion a thought wave that swept the entire world. Perhaps never in the history of the world had so many millions of people thought of the same thing in the same manner at the same time. For once in the history of the world, everybody felt something in common, and the effect of this harmonized thought was the worldwide mob psychology that we witnessed on Armistice Day. In connection with this statement, it will be helpful if you recall what was said about the method of creating a mastermind through the harmony of thought of two or more persons in the introductory lesson in Volume 1 of this course. We will bring the application of this principle a little nearer home by showing how it may be made to make or break the harmonious working relationship of a business or industry. You may doubt that it was the harmony of thought of millions of soldiers that registered in the minds of the people of the world and caused the mob psychological condition on Armistice Day, but you will need no proof that a disgruntled person always disturbs everyone with whom he comes in contact. It is a well-established fact that one such person in a place of employment will disrupt the entire organization. Apply the principle in another way. Place among a group of workers one person whose personality is of the positive, optimistic type, and who makes it his business to sow the seeds of harmony around the place where he works, and his influence will reflect itself in every person who works with him. If every business is the extended shadow of one man, as Emerson stated, then it behooves that one man to reflect a shadow of confidence and good cheer and optimism and harmony, that these qualities may, in turn, reflect themselves in all who are connected with the business. Put imagination to work. In passing to the next step in our application of the power of imagination in the attainment of success, we will cite some of the most recent and modern examples of its use in the accumulation of material wealth and the perfection of some of the leading inventions of the world. In approaching this next step, it should be borne in mind that there is nothing new under the sun. Life on this earth may be likened to a great kaleidoscope, before which the scenes and facts and material substances are ever shifting and changing, and all anyone can do is take these facts and substances and rearrange them in new combinations. The process through which this is done is called imagination. We have stated that the imagination is both interpretive and creative in its nature. It can receive impressions or ideas, and out of these, it can form new combinations. As our first illustration of the power of imagination in modern business achievement, we will take the case of Clarence Saunders, who organized the Piggly Wiggly system of self-help grocery stores. Saunders was a grocery clerk in a small southern retail store. One day, he was standing in line with a tin tray in his hands, waiting his turn to secure food in a cafeteria. He had never earned more than $20 a week before that time, and no one had ever noticed anything about him that indicated unusual ability, but something took place in his mind, as he stood in that line of waiting people, that put his imagination to work. With the aid of his imagination, he lifted that self-help idea out of the cafeteria in which he found it, not creating anything new, merely shifting an old idea into a new use, and set it down in a grocery store. In an instant, the Piggly Wiggly chain store grocery plan had been created, and Clarence Saunders, the $20-a-week grocery store clerk, rapidly became the million-dollar chain store groceryman of America. Where in that transaction do you see the slightest indication of a performance that you could not duplicate? Analyze this transaction and measure it by the previous lessons of this course, and you will see that Clarence Saunders created a very definite purpose. He supported this purpose with sufficient self-confidence to cause him to take the initiative to transform it into a reality. His imagination was the workshop in which these three factors, a definite aim, self-confidence, and initiative, were brought together and made to supply the momentum for the first step in the organization of the Piggly Wiggly plan. Thus are great ideas changed into realities. From the editors. A few years later, Sylvan Goldman, who owned a supermarket himself in Kansas City, saw his customers struggling to carry everything they wanted in small baskets. What would make it easier for my customers to carry more things and thus buy more, Goldman wondered. Then one day, he saw a child playing with the wagon. Soon, the shopping cart made its debut in Goldman's store. Today, it seems such an obvious part of going shopping that it is almost strange to think that someone invented it. Thomas Stenberg was the manager of another supermarket. He knew how the business worked, and he began to wonder if there wasn't some other kind of retail operation that could be run the same way. He decided to apply the supermarket concept to office supplies, and he gave his first new store the name Staples. And now, returning to Napoleon Hill's original text. When Thomas A. Edison invented the incandescent electric light bulb, he merely brought together two old, well-known principles and associated them in a new combination. Mr. Edison, and practically all others who were informed on the subject of electricity, knew that a light could be produced by heating a small wire with electricity. But the difficult problem was to do this without burning the wire in two. In his experimental research, Mr. Edison tried out every conceivable sort of wire, hoping to find some substance that would withstand the tremendous heat to which it had to be subjected before a light could be produced. Edison's imagination finally delivered for him when he compared his problem with the making of charcoal. Charcoal is created by burning wood under a mound of dirt. This cuts off most of the available oxygen, which is necessary for combustion. Edison needed to make the wire burn like charcoal. His solution was to enclose the wire in a glass bulb and then pump out almost all of the oxygen. Combustion still occurred, but at such a slow rate that the wire lasted long enough for the light bulb to be useful. Even then, Edison's idea still required many refinements in terms of the right kind of wire, the proper thickness, and type of glass. Those refinements continue today, but nothing obscures the fact that it was Edison who made the essential connection, and he did it by repeated attempts to apply his imagination. When the sun goes down tonight, you step to the wall, press a button, and bring it back again, a performance that would have mystified the people of a few generations ago. Thanks to the use of Edison's imagination, you have simply brought together two principles, both of which were in existence since the beginning of time. No one who knew him intimately ever accredited Andrew Carnegie with unusual ability or the power of genius, except in one respect, and that was his ability to select men who could and would cooperate in a spirit of harmony in carrying out his wishes. But what additional ability did he need in the accumulation of his millions of dollars? The editor's comment. Throughout this course, your imagination should prompt you to make connections between principles and apply them in ways that are unique to your situation. Begin with your definite chief aim. Look at the written statement you have made of it. Is there some way that you might now modify that statement to make it clearer, more accurate, or closer to what you truly want? Sometimes you will discover that you have misplaced the emphasis in what you have set out to do. This is not uncommon, and hardly cause for despair or frustration. Some of the greatest successes have come when people have looked at their goals and seen that they were not right for their situation. Back now to Napoleon Hill's text. Anyone who understands the principle of organized effort, as Carnegie understood it, and knows enough about human nature to be able to select just those types that are needed in the performance of a given task, could duplicate all that Carnegie accomplished. Carnegie was a leader of imagination. He first created a definite purpose and then surrounded himself with people who had the training and the vision and the capacity necessary for the transformation of that purpose into reality. Carnegie did not always create his own plans for the attainment of his definite purpose. He made it his business to know what he wanted, then found others who could create plans through which he could procure it. And that was not only imagination, it was genius of the highest order. But it should be made clear that individuals of Mr. Carnegie's type are not the only ones who can make profitable use of imagination. This great power is available to the beginner in business as it is to the person who has arrived. One morning, Charles M. Schwab's private car was backed on the sidetrack at his Bethlehem steel plant. As he alighted from his car, he was met by a young man stenographer who announced that he had come to make sure that any letters or telegrams Mr. Schwab might wish to write would be taken care of promptly. No one told this young man to be on hand, but he had enough imagination to see that his being there would not hurt his chances of advancement. From that day on, this young man was marked for promotion. Mr. Schwab singled him out for promotion because he had done that which any of the dozen or so stenographers in the employ of the Bethlehem Steel Company might have done, but didn't. Today, this same man is the president of one of the largest drug concerns in the world and has all of this world's goods and wares that he wants and much more than he needs. Editor's Commentary. The Sony Corporation once set its engineers the task of developing a very small tape recorder that would record on standard-sized cassettes. The best they could do, however, was to make a small device that would play tapes because the recording mechanism was too large to fit into it. When it didn't meet their aim, they concluded that the design was a failure. Then one day, engineer Mitsuo Ida walked into the laboratory and saw that a few of the other engineers were using the prototypes of the failed tape recorder to listen to music tapes. They didn't seem to care that it couldn't record. They just liked to be able to walk around listening to their favorite music. Mitsuo Ida's imagination made the connection that the rest of the engineers had not. They hadn't made a failed recorder. They'd created a successful listener. They added headphones, named it the Walkman, and it revolutionized both the music business and the electronics industry. Returning to Napoleon Hill's text. A few years ago, I received a letter from a young man who had just finished business college and who wanted to secure employment in my office. With his letter, he sent a crisp $10 bill that had never been folded. The letter read as follows. I have just finished a commercial course in a first-class business college, and I want a position in your office because I realize how much it would be worth to a young man just starting out on his business career to have the privilege of working under the direction of a man like you. If the enclosed $10 bill is sufficient to pay for the time you would spend in giving me my first week's instructions, I want you to accept it. I will work the first month without pay, and you may set my wages after that at whatever I prove to be worth. I want this job more than I ever wanted anything in my life, and I'm willing to make any reasonable sacrifice to get it. Very cordially. This young man got his chance in my office. His imagination gained for him the opportunity that he wanted, and before his first month had expired, the president of a life insurance company who heard of this incident offered the young man a private secretaryship at a substantial salary. He is today an official of one of the largest life insurance companies in the world. Some years ago, a young man wrote to Thomas A. Edison for a position. For some reason, Mr. Edison did not reply. By no means discouraged on this account, the young man made up his mind that he would not only get a reply from Mr. Edison, but what was more important still, he would actually secure the position he sought. He lived a long distance from West Orange, New Jersey, where the Edison Industries are located, and he did not have the money with which to pay his railroad fare. But he did have imagination. He went to West Orange in a freight car, got his interview, told his story in person, and got the job he sought. Today, this same man has retired from active business, having made all the money he needs. His name, in case you wish to confirm my statements, is Edwin C. Barnes. The Editor's Comment. Edwin C. Barnes not only got a job with Edison, but he ultimately became a business associate of the famed inventor. It was largely through Barnes' belief in the Edison dictating machine and his unflagging salesmanship that the device became a staple in business offices throughout the country. Now back to Napoleon Hill's original text. By using his imagination, Mr. Barnes saw the advantage of close association with a man like Thomas A. Edison. He saw that such an association would give him the opportunity to study Mr. Edison, and at the same time, it would bring him in contact with Mr. Edison's friends, who are among the most influential people in the world. These are but a few cases in connection with which I have personally observed how people have climbed to high places in the world and accumulated wealth in abundance by making practical use of their imagination. Again, the editor's comment. When the first Xerox copies were introduced, the machines were very expensive. So Xerox didn't sell the machines. They leased them and charged customers for each copy that was made. It was a whole new way of doing business. It was imaginative, and it changed the way modern offices worked. Ruth Hander's daughter Barbara liked playing dress-up, and she liked playing with dolls. When Ruth went looking for a doll that could be dressed up, she found that there weren't any on the market. Every doll had just one dress. Why doesn't somebody combine these two favorite pastimes, Hander wondered. So, she did it herself and named the doll for her daughter, calling it Barbie. George Demestral went hunting one day with his dog. When they got home, he realized that they were both covered with burrs. The burrs were a real nuisance to remove, and, curious, Demestral put them under a magnifying glass to see why. They were covered with tiny hooks that attached themselves to fur and fabric. Demestral began to wonder what else could be attached with tiny hooks, and the result of his wondering was Velcro. All of these people took an idea from one source and gave it a new app. And now back to the original text. Theodore Roosevelt engraved his name on the tablets of time by one single act during his tenure of office as President of the United States, and after all else that he did while in office will have been forgotten, this one transaction will record him in history as a person of imagination. He started the steam shovels to work on the Panama Canal. Every president, from Washington on up to Roosevelt, could have started the canal, and it would have been completed, but it seemed such a colossal undertaking that it required not only imagination, but daring courage as well. Roosevelt had both, and the people of the United States have the canal. The editor's comment. Franklin Roosevelt, President of the United States through one of the most difficult times in its history, used his imagination to strengthen his self-confidence. Roosevelt had been a vigorous and active man until polio cost him the use of his legs. For a leader who guided the country through the Great Depression and World War II, paralysis was a terrible specter, and it would have been disastrous if he let the limitations of his legs affect his spirit. Often, when he was troubled and unable to sleep, Roosevelt would imagine himself on a hillside near his boyhood home. Standing in the snow with his sled, he would push off on his sled and imagine himself skimming across the snow, negotiating sharp turns, avoiding obstacles until he reached the bottom and stood up, ready to race back up the hill and do it again. As his biographer Doris Kearns Goodwin writes, it was an imaginative act of will. And back to the original text. At the age of 40, the age at which the average man or woman begins to think they are too old to start anything new, James J. Hill was still sitting at the telegraph key at a salary of $30 per month. He had no capital. He had no influential friends with capital. But he did have that which is more powerful than either, imagination. In his mind's eye, he saw a great railway system that would penetrate the undeveloped Northwest and unite the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. So vivid was his imagination that he made others see the advantages of such a railway system. I would emphasize the part of the story that most people never mention, that Hill's Great Northern Railway System became a reality in his own imagination first. The railroad was built with steel rails and wooden crossties, just as other railroads are built, and these things were paid for with capital that was secured in very much the same manner that capital for all railroads is secured. But if you want the real story of James J. Hill's success, you must go back to that little country railway station where he worked at $30 a month and there pick up the little threads that he wove into a mighty railroad with materials no more visible than the thoughts which he organized in his imagination. What a mighty power is imagination, the workshop of the soul, in which thoughts are woven into railroads and skyscrapers and mills and factories and all manner of material wealth. I hold it true that thoughts are things. They're endowed with bodies and breath and wings, and that we send them forth to fill the world with good results or ill. That which we call our secret thought speeds forth to earth's remotest spot, leaving its blessings or its woes like tracks behind it as it goes. We build our future thought by thought, for good or ill, yet know it not, yet so the universe was wrought. Thought is another name for fate. Choose, then, thy destiny and wait, for love brings love, and hate brings hate. If your imagination is the mirror of your soul, then you have a perfect right to stand before that mirror and see yourself as you wish to be. You have the right to see reflected in that magic mirror the mansion you intend to own, the factory you intend to manage, the bank of which you intend to be president, the station in life you intend to occupy. Your imagination belongs to you. Use it. The more you use it, the more efficiently it will serve you. The editor's comment. You have already learned that the power of self-suggestion makes you become the thoughts that you permit to occupy your mind. If you imagine that you have no imagination, this valuable faculty will devote itself to nothing more than creating images of yourself being unable to respond to opportunities and new situations. What you must do instead is imagine yourself being imaginative. Acquire a small notebook that you can keep accessible as much of the day as possible. Get one for work and one for home if you need to. In this book, as often as you can, you will write down ideas that come to you. These should be ideas for anything that it seems to you could be done differently. You don't have to know how they could be done differently, just that a better way might be possible or useful. They can be big, enormous things, or small, everyday things. Don't worry about feeling silly or that you're just making up things to put something on the page. Even making things up requires that you use your imagination. Resuming Napoleon Hill's original text. Imagination does the impossible. At the east end of the Great Brooklyn Bridge in New York City, an old man operates a cobbler shop. When the engineers began driving stakes and marking the foundation place for that great steel structure, this man shook his head and said, "It can't be done." Now he looks out from his dingy little shoe repair shop, shakes his head, and asks himself, "How did they do it?" He saw the bridge grow before his very eyes, and still he lacks the imagination to analyze that which he saw. The engineer who planned the bridge saw it as a reality long before a single shovel of dirt had been removed for the foundation stones. The bridge became a reality in his imagination because he had trained that imagination to weave new combinations out of old ideas. In one of the cities on the coast of California, all of the land that was suitable for building lots had been developed and put into use. On one side of the city, there were some steep hills that could not be used for building purposes. And on the other side, the land was unsuitable for buildings because it was so low that the backwater covered it once a day. And then, an imaginative newcomer arrived in town. People of imagination usually have keen minds, and this man was no exception. The first day of his arrival, he saw the possibilities for making money out of real estate. He secured an option on those hills that were unsuitable for use because of their steepness. He also secured an option on the ground that was unsuitable for use because of the backwater that covered it daily. He secured these options at a very low price because the ground was supposed to be without substantial value. With the use of a few tons of explosives, he turned those steep hills into loose dirt. With the aid of a few tractors and some road scrapers, he leveled the ground down and turned it into beautiful building lots. And with the aid of a few mules and carts, he dumped the surplus dirt on the low ground and raised it above the water level, thereby turning it into beautiful building lots. He made a substantial fortune. For what? For removing some dirt from where it was not needed to where it was needed. For mixing some useless dirt with imagination. The people of that little city gave this man credit for being a genius, and he was. The same sort of genius that any one of them could have been had he used his imagination as this man used. Editor's Commentary. You will often find yourself in situations where you face a problem that offers no obvious solutions. The following four techniques for focusing your imagination are designed to help you get around problems in your quest for success. Imagination helps you look at a situation in a novel way and make connections that you have not seen before. These exercises may not present you with million-dollar solutions, but they do have the power to stimulate your mind to consider new approaches. Call a Council of Advisors. In Volume 1 of The Law of Success, there is a story about the man who imagined himself at a table surrounded by great figures whom he wanted to emulate. The purpose for this imaginary group of great leaders is to ask each of them how they would tackle a particular problem. Seek random inspiration. Select a book of inspiring words, perhaps the Bible or a book of quotations, or the autobiography of someone you admire. Open it anywhere and read the first sentence your eyes fall upon. turn the world upside down. Make a list of the 4 or 5 major components of your problem. Underneath each of them, write down what the opposite situation would be. Go away. Strange as it may seem, sometimes focusing your imagination on a problem can be a trap. You need a way to break free of the mental boundaries you have created. The key is to reduce pressure on yourself and allow your mind a freedom that you have not been giving it. Continuing with Napoleon Hill's original text. In the field of chemistry, it is possible to mix 2 or more chemical ingredients in such proportions that the mere act of mixing gives each of the ingredients a tremendous amount of energy that it did not possess. It is also possible to mix certain chemical ingredients in such proportions that all the ingredients of the combination take on an entirely different nature, as in the case of H2O, which is a mixture of 2 parts hydrogen and 1 part oxygen, creating water. Chemistry is not the only field in which a combination of various physical materials can be so assembled that each takes on a greater value, or the result is a product entirely foreign in nature to that of its component parts. The man who blew up those useless hills of dirt and stone and removed the surplus from where it was not needed over to the lowland where it was needed gave that dirt and stone a value that it did not have before. A ton of iron is worth little. Add to it carbon, silicon, manganese, sulfur, and phosphorus in the right proportions, and you have transformed it into steel, which is of much greater value. Add still other substances in the right proportion, including some skilled labor, and that same ton of steel is transformed into watch springs worth a small fortune. But in all these transformation processes, the one ingredient that is worth most is the one that has no material form, imagination. Here lie great piles of loose brick, lumber, nails, and glass. In its present form, it is worse than useless, for it is a nuisance and an eyesore. But mix it with the architect's imagination and add some skilled labor, and it becomes a beautiful mansion worth a king's ransom. On one of the great highways between New York and Philadelphia stood an old ramshackle, time-worn barn worth less than $50. With the aid of a little lumber and some cement, plus imagination, this old barn has been turned into a beautiful automobile supply station that earns a small fortune for the man who supplied the imagination. Across the street from my office is a little print shop that earns coffee and rolls for its owner and its helper, but no more. Less than a dozen blocks away stands one of the most modern printing plants in the world, whose owner spends most of his time traveling and has far more wealth than he will ever use. 22 years ago, those two printers were in business together. The one who owns the big print shop had the good judgment to ally himself with the man who mixed imagination with printing. This man of imagination is an advertising writer who brings in more business than the shop can handle by analyzing its clients' business, creating attractive advertising features, and supplying the necessary printed material with which to make these features of service. This plant receives top-notch prices for its printing because the imagination mixed with that printing produces a product that most printers cannot supply. In the city of Chicago, the level of a certain boulevard was raised, which spoiled a row of beautiful residences because the sidewalk was raised to the level of the second-story windows. While the property owners were bemoaning their ill fortune, a man of imagination came along, purchased the property for a song, converted the second stories into business property, and now enjoys a handsome income from his rentals. Please keep in mind all that was stated in the beginning of this lesson, especially the fact that the greatest and most profitable thing you can do with your imagination is the act of rearranging old ideas in new combinations. If you properly use your imagination, it will help you convert your failures and mistakes into assets of priceless value. It will lead you to discovery of a truth known only to those who use their imagination, namely, that the greatest reverses and misfortunes of life often open the door to golden opportunities. One of the finest and most highly paid engravers in the United States was formerly a mail carrier. One day he was fortunate enough to be on a streetcar that met with an accident, and he had one of his legs cut off. The street railway company paid him $5,000 for his leg. With this money, he paid his way through school and became an engraver. The product of his hands plus his imagination is worth much more than he could earn with his legs as a mail carrier. He discovered that he had imagination when it became necessary to redirect his efforts as a result of the streetcar accident. You will never know what is your capacity for achievement until you learn how to mix your efforts with imagination. The products of your hands minus imagination will yield you but a small return, but those self-same hands, when properly guided by imagination, can be made to earn you all the material wealth you can use. There are two ways in which you can profit by imagination. You can develop this faculty in your own mind, or you can ally yourself with those who have already developed it. Andrew Carnegie did both. He not only made use of his own fertile imagination, but he gathered around him a group of others who also possessed this essential quality, for his definite purpose in life called for specialists whose imaginations ran in numerous directions. In that group that constituted Mr. Carnegie's mastermind were men whose imaginations were confined to the field of chemistry. He had others in the group whose imaginations were confined to finances. He had still others whose imaginations were confined to salesmanship, one of whom was Charles M. Schwab, who is said to have been the most able salesman on Mr. Carnegie. If you feel that your own imagination is inadequate, you should form an alliance with someone whose imagination is sufficiently developed to supply your deficiency. There are various forms of alliance. For example, there is the alliance of marriage, and the alliance of a business partnership, and the alliance of friendship, and the alliance of employer and employee. Not all workers have the capacity to serve their own best interests as employers, and those who haven't this capacity may profit by aligning themselves with people of imagination who have such capacity. It is said that Mr. Carnegie made more millionaires of his employees than any other employer in the steel business. Among these was Charles M. Schwab, who displayed evidence of the soundest sort of imagination by his good judgment in aligning himself with Mr. Carnegie. It is no disgrace to serve in the capacity of employee. To the contrary, it often proves to be the most profitable side of an alliance, since not all of us are fitted to assume the responsibility of directing others. From the editors. Figures like Michelangelo or Georgia O'Keeffe are renowned for their imaginations, but the essence of what they did is simple. They looked at the world in a way that no one else had before, and they translated their visions into work. Imagination is always reshaping the world as people connect seemingly disparate things. Once the connection is made, it may seem obvious, but making these supposedly obvious creations has brought success to many people. John D. Rockefeller was a partner in an oil refining business in Cleveland, Ohio. In the early days of petroleum production, the business was extremely volatile. The price of a barrel of oil fluctuated enormously. Determined to make his company succeed, Rockefeller realized that if he couldn't control oil prices, he might help himself by controlling his costs. So he set up a barrel-making operation that cut barrel costs by more than 60%. That move was so profitable, Rockefeller began investigating what other parts of the business his company could control. Soon, he owned pipelines and oil wells along with his refineries. He had created the first vertical corporation, one that supplied all its own needs, and one that became the huge Standard. You must learn to focus your imagination and then act upon the right ideas that you develop. This is not an overnight process. A multi-million dollar idea will not spring from your brain tomorrow morning simply because you will it. In most people, imagination is handicapped by two things. First, it is not usefully focused. It flits from object to object, driven by circumstance. Today, your imagination may be stimulated by a movie you saw, tomorrow by a newspaper headline, and the next day by a bit of conversation you overheard on the street. Its powers are scattered. Or second, it may be in a thrall to the six basic fears, creating visions of some rare and dreaded disease, a disaster at work, or romantic betrayal. In such situations, its powers are at work, but only to your detriment. But if you do begin to focus your imagination, it will not take long at all for you to have many small ideas of surprising usefulness. As you begin to apply these ideas, your confidence in your imagination and in yourself will grow. There are numerous books and audiobooks specifically designed to help stimulate the imagination and create solutions to problems. Following is a list of a few of the many books and audio programs that will help you tap into your creativity and imagination. Super Creativity by Tony Buzan. The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. Lateral Thinking, Six Thinking Hats, and Super Thinking by Edward de Bono. Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain by Betty Edwards. The Zen of Seeing by Frederick Frank. Writing Down the Bones by Natalie Goldberg. Peak Learning by Ronald Gross. Thinker Toys by Michael Michalko. Super Learning by Sheila Ostrander and Lynn Schroeder. Writing the Natural Way by Gabrielle Rico. A Kick in the Seat of the Pants by R. von Uch. There are also numerous computer programs designed to stimulate new ideas and creativity. Now back to Napoleon Hill's original text. Perhaps there is no field of endeavor in which imagination plays such an important part as it does in salesmanship. The master salesman sees the merits of the goods he sells or the service he is rendering in his own imagination, and if he fails to do so, he will not make the sale.